AM Columbus, W224 EG Madison, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Chuck Sievertson. While in France for the D-Day anniversary, President Biden tomorrow meets with French President Macron in Paris. Of the French leader's past comment that he could see NATO troops sent to Ukraine, this from White House National Security Council spokesman John Kirby.
As President of the United States and Commander-in-Chief, he's made his own view well known that there's not going to be U.S. boots on the ground in combat in Ukraine. That has been the case, and that will remain the case going forward.
A small plane that crashed in a residential neighborhood and caught fire in Arvada, Colorado, leaves two children and two adults in critical condition. Two shark attacks off two Florida panhandle beaches leave three people injured, two critically. The former Apollo 8 astronaut who took the iconic Earthrise photo from space, showing our planet as a fragile-looking floating blue marble, was killed in a plane crash in waters off Washington State today. Retired Major General William Anders was 90. This is ABC News.
I'm Terry Bell with WMDX News. Your news in depth. Find it in the news section on the WMDX website at mad.radio.
Civic Media News, I'm Ella Saff. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Governor Tony Evers is asking for audits of Milwaukee public schools. That's in addition to the financial audit already underway. This comes after Milwaukee schools failed to turn in financial reports due last September. Now, the state is withholding more than $16 million in aid. Evers' proposed audits would look into the functionality and effectiveness of Milwaukee's public schools. The scandal at Waupun Prison is renewing talks of replacing the aging state prisons at Waupun and Green Bay. State Representative Mark Bourne says the lockups are too old to remodel.
Both of those facilities, they're built in such a different way that refurbishing them is very difficult, very expensive. It would be hard to make them useful in a modern prison way.
Dodge County Sheriff Dale Schmidt recommends remodeling or rebuilding. And that's what you need to know. I'm Ella Saff, and this is Civic Media News.
Are your taste buds bored? Awaken those tired senses with a culinary treat at La Pollera Colombiana in Madison. La Pollera Colombiana's delicious, authentic cuisine is like taking a food journey through Colombia. There's a dance of flavors in every bite. Open Sunday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 10 p.m. Friday and Saturday, 9 a.m. till midnight. La Pollera Colombiana, 3579 East Washington Avenue in Madison. Your taste buds will thank you. La Pollera Colombiana.
Mad Radio 92.7 WMDX.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to, lots to talk about. Want to start off today's program with a message from my son. Today was his high school graduation. And, you know, as he stands on this threshold of a new chapter of his life, I want to let him know how incredibly proud of him I am and the young man that he's become. You know, going through high school, this graduation marks the culmination of years of hard work, dedication, growth, especially going through the pandemic, having to adapt to change. Gotta tell you, I'm filled with joy and admiration as, you know, I got to witness this significant milestone in his life. And as he and his classmates embark on the next chapter of their lives, I want him to know that my hopes, my dreams for him are boundless. I know he can do whatever he puts his mind to, and I hope that he never loses that curiosity and that thirst for knowledge and that eagerness to learn and grow and do better and want to do better. I hope that he embraces these challenges that are coming, and I know they can be overwhelming. But see these challenges as opportunities for growth and really never shy away from pursuing what is his passion. What are his dreams? A lot of us, especially you get back a little up in age, you start looking back and going, you know, maybe I should have. I want for my child, as I think every parent does, them to be able to pursue their passion, to live their dreams, no matter how daunting the task may seem. You know, I thought back, you know, from that 1 a.m. 100 mile an hour car ride to the hospital until this very moment, I've dreamed of a future for him that was filled with, that's filled with success, with happiness, with opportunity. Wherever he finds himself, whatever career he pursues, I hope it brings him joy and purpose. And where he can make a positive impact on the world, I hope he does. I hope he'll always be true to himself, his values, his beliefs, and that he never compromises who he is, his integrity, his word, just to fit in or to get approval from others. I hope that he'll be the man who stands on his own two feet firmly, confidently, remembering that life's a journey filled with twists and turns, ups and downs. But I have no doubt that he's going to have the strength, the determination, the resilience, the will to navigate even the roughest waters with grace and courage. I hope for him to have everything that life can offer. I'll be here for him as forever. Cheer him on. Offer guidance, encouragement. And, you know, as he takes these next steps, sets out to conquer the world, so to speak, I hope he remembers that no dream is too big and no goal is out of reach as long as you work hard for it. And I believe in him wholeheartedly, and I know that he's going to be the man that I will be proud of. So congratulations, buddy, on your high school graduation. I love you. And look, you know, the reality is I wish this for everyone. I wish this for every high school student, and I wish them opportunities and this time of year. The weird thing, though, and I have to comment on this quick. I saw a video coming, and thank goodness the good people of our community allowed it to be about the students, about the kids. There's this video of a father in this day and age stepping in front of a black man so that his daughter wouldn't touch him. We can be better. And it's these moments when our children are taking these next steps that I go, we should be better. We can be better. We must be better for them so that as they take these next steps, they do so with courage, conviction, and decency. You know, as parents, our goal is to set a proper path, a good path, not be the, well, what we saw. So on these days, I a little emotional in that I want to leave something better. As I was sitting watching him get his diploma, entering the world that he's about to enter, my resolve to make this a better place just got a little stronger. And it's my hope on days like this, we all, regardless if it's our child graduating today or not, where we all resolve to say we want to make this a better place. We want the next generation to have something worth inheriting. So that's my little rant. I appreciate you taking time for me. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Sarah Burris from Raw Story is going to be here to share some thoughts. Stick around. Right back.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
I gotta tell you, still can't get it out of my head, this graduation video of the father, you know, jumping up on the stage, like we talked about. Because don't want my daughter touching the black guy. Really just bizarre. And sadly, I know there are people out there going, well, I can defend him. No, indefensible. Why you would ruin your kid's day like that, just beyond me. But here to share some thoughts maybe on this and the Trump Dr. Phil, whatever that was. I've asked our good friend Sarah Burris to come talk with us. Sarah's a reporter over at Raw Story, rawstory.com, the website. Sarah, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, how the heck are you?
I'm good. Did you see this video of this this idiot jumping up on stage?
Yeah.
And you know, I'm watching it, I'm going, what's this guy doing? Oh, he's just pushing the black guy off the stage.
And what was interesting is there were a couple of social media comments from folks that are from the community that I found, because I went down the rabbit hole with this guy whenever I wrote about him. And what they said was that he was reacting to something about his daughter being bullied, and so he didn't like the super or the school board's rules on bullying or something. The thing was is that I face matched a bunch of members of the school board to the people that were on stage, and it's like, well, then why didn't you attack the other people on the stage? It was just the black guy.
Yeah.
And the audio is very clear. Like, he makes the comment where, you know, he said, I don't want him to touch her or something like that. But what was sad is, like, you could see this poor girl's face where she didn't, like, you could see she was startled and she didn't know what was happening. And then she has that realization where it's her father and, you know, her face just drops. Like, this moment that was hers just falls. And she just, like, puts her hand over her head and then stands there for a minute. And then takes her tassel and moves it over and walks off. And I just wanted to hug this poor child.
Yeah, no.
This was so awful.
You know, where's someone to go do a GoFundMe to get her away from him? Because, you know,
yeah.
The sad reality is, you know, there are people like this still out there.
I mean, there's that, but it's not just racism, it's people who then act on it in a way that is not just really terrible, but in a way that hurts their family.
Yeah.
And that's the thing where it's just like, that's when you're taking your own stupidity to a whole new level. And I mean, that's hard to justify as anything other than some kind of psychological abuse.
Now, I gotta tell you, I looked at it and my first thought was, you know, as my grandfather said, you know, you need a license to get a dog. Anyone can have a kid.
Yeah. And I don't know what the family situation is like, and I don't, but just the way that she reacted to it, where she,
oh, here we go again,
she didn't seem surprised. Her face was very much like, oh, great, not again. And the way that she walked off, you know, it was just very resigned to this idea that it's like, this is my life.
It's amazing. Amazing that in this day and age, someone's still that ignorant. I got to get to the big story. I'm sure you saw the Trump Dr. Phil video. I hope Dr. Phil got paid. You know, the oldest profession in the world. He performed the act very well. But yeah, they had their little powwow. Quite amusing.
The thing that was really sad is that there are there's a real conversation I feel like that should be had with Donald Trump, and a lot of his answers that, I mean, I feel like if you had the same kind of conversation with Joe Biden, it would be very, very emotionally mature. And with Donald Trump, it was very not, right? Like there were comments about the revenge thing where Dr. Phil said, you know, you seem addicted to revenge. And he's like, well, sometimes revenge is justified.
Yeah.
It's like, yes, yeah, sometimes heroin is justified. It's like, no, that's not how that works. That's not how any of this works.
Yeah, you know, he said, you know, revenge does take time. And I say that, and sometimes revenge can be justified. But I have to be honest, you know, sometimes it can. And I'm going, not in my president. I'm a little concerned about that whole fixation on payback and no real agenda how to make people's lives better.
Right. That's the thing, is it's like, if you are focusing all of your time and energy on your own grievances and you don't care about the rest of us, then why are you running for president instead of running for, you know, your own, instead of Speaker of the House?
Yeah. See,
sure they would appoint him to Speaker of the House.
See, now, look, you know, this is where I look at Dr. Phil, who I've never liked. I've always thought he was, you know, just a, you know, someone out there, just a cash. I can't say the W word, but it goes along with the oldest profession, the act he performed during this interview. But, you know, I wish he would have treated Trump the way he treats most of the dysfunction on his show. With the kind of probing and the kind of digging into and obviously mocking them, because this guy is seriously flawed. When you're going to call Adam Schiff watermelon head, I don't know that's presidential. I'm struggling here.
Well, there's that. And the interesting thing is that, you know, I feel like when Dr. Phil was on a legitimate network, like this whole thing was on a streaming service that he owns.
Right.
This is not on any kind of network station. This is not on Oprah Winfrey's show. So in the past several episodes, when I sort of whenever I found out that this network existed and like what he was doing, a bunch of his stuff seems very much targeted to either attack Joe Biden, attack Joe Biden's policies. He went on this whole thing about, you know, Israel and Hamas. He's having very political conversations and couching them within the idea of psychology, right, and mental health, when that is as far from it as possible. And I mean, honestly, the way that I sort of view him now is he's like the Dr. Oz of psychology, right? Like he's out there pushing nonsense just the way Dr. Oz was.
Yeah, but I always view Dr. Phil in that light. I've always looked at him as that kind of a quack.
And honestly, I mean, you just want to be like, dude, Oprah, what were you thinking? Like, you got two of these guys now who just are a complete waste of space for humanity. And I mean,
yeah, I was going to say, how much of this is Oprah's fault? But, you know, here's the thing. And this is where my mind started going as I'm watching this going, I hope that someone charges the Trump campaign for this, because this has got to be an in-kind contribution of some sort. This is not media. This is not, you know, this isn't reporting. This is certainly not journalism. And it's not a moment on the couch. This is pure propaganda. This is pure and simple propaganda.
It is. And I think that's what it was meant to be. And the reason, I mean, one of the dead giveaways and also the thing that I'm probably the most concerned about is you start to see in the video, the full video of it, they're just constant cuts.
Right.
There's just so much editing, and it's not a smooth editing process. And so it's like, what are they taking out? You know, what crazy or like mentally unwell comments or just random insanity are they removing? Because it's, I mean, what they left in was pretty bad.
Yeah.
And if it's like that, I mean, especially with the Hannity interview too this week and the other Fox interview, like those three interviews put together have been really, really terrible. And so you just have to wonder, like, if they're showing that part of it, then what are they not showing?
Exactly. But, you know, here's the thing. And I get why Trump would sit down with Dr. Phil. and this is going to sound misogynistic, but it is what it is. Dr. Phil's audience is, you know, older women. That's going to be the demographic. And Trump has got some problems there, given the fact that, you know, Roe versus Wade is his responsibility. You know, the grabber by the you-know-what, the E. Jean Carroll thing. There's so much here with that demographic that having Dr. Phil's, nose covered in orange, I think could be helpful to him. So I see this as very dangerous propaganda.
I think that makes sense, but it makes me wonder, because there was that same idea with Dr. Oz. You know, he had the exact same kind of audience, the exact same sort of draw, and it became very, very clear that he was a quack. And
yeah, but he had no charisma. I got to be honest with you. Trump has something that you can't compare with the Dr. Quack. There's a difference there for me, at least for me anyway.
He just has so much anger. I just can't imagine older women like looking at something like that and being okay with it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, like, and I would say too, like my mother was a hardcore Dr. Phil watcher. And then I think it's been like in the last year or so, she's just been like, this is something ain't right with him. Like something, this show isn't, he's a quack.
No. You see, here's where I come back to having done this gig for as long as I've done it. I've gone to, you know, radio host conventions, and I've met a good number of the most famous talk show hosts in the country. And I truly don't believe every one of them believes what comes out of their mouths. It's a sales job. It's about the sale. I met Alex Jones a couple of times, and I'm not taking credit for Alex Jones, but I met him a couple of times, seemed very rational in face-to-face conversations, understood that this was a business. And in fact, the last time I saw him, he was brought to an event so that everyone else could learn how he was, you know, sucking money out of the internet. And he was never telling that, but he went from zero to crazy in the blink of an eye. And you knew it's all shtick. It's all about getting money in. And, you know, look, the guy's worth $1 billion. Does an internet show. It's amazing how he's been able to get people to just throw their money at him because he's telling them the craziest stuff.
I would say the same is true for like Tucker Carlson. You saw the evolution from who he was, you know, in those early days all the way to, you know, this fringe nutter that's basically associated with Alex Jones. He may as well just be, you know, the younger, more well-coiffed version of him.
You know, there's the Limbaugh, and then there's the, oh my gosh, we've gone completely off the deep end, and off the deep end is profitable.
It is. It's much more profitable because we're in a world of extremes. I think people who are, you know, the middle of the road world doesn't want to talk about politics all the time. You have to. That's why everybody's on each side, because those are the people that are paying the most attention and have strong opinions. And so they're viewing a lot of this stuff. And the only option that the right has to make money and to constantly engage those folks is by going as far to the right as they possibly can. The problem with that, obviously, is that's not where the electorate is.
Yeah.
Like, that is not the majority. And so you end up with people like, you know, I've been writing a lot about Larry Hogan in Maryland, because he's trying to play this game where he is, you know, he's very clearly a never Trumper. He's always been a never Trumper. He hates Donald Trump. And he's trying to make a way in the Republican Party for this idea of, you know, political polarization is bad and we need to all come together and yada, yada, yada. And he's alienating Trump supporters. But at the same time, those of us who actually know how politics work are like, dude, you're going to vote for the MAGA people to be the leaders of the Senate.
Yep.
Like, this is who your party is now. And you can tell that is the case because they're attacking you now because you were stupid enough to say, you know, let's uphold the law and the justice system. And let's, regardless of what happens, let's believe that our justice system is a good thing to have in a country. And everybody was like, no justice system, no
It's bad. It's broken, except when it's going after Hunter Biden. But the last thing I want to talk about in this Dr. Phil thing, when I saw Dr. Phil, a couple of things, you have such thick skin. You know, why do you put yourself through all this? Oh, dear leader. But the thing that got my attention the most was he said that he's done focus groups. And he's done focus groups with people who said that they have not voted for Trump, not been a Trump fan, but they have donated to him and are voting for him because he's inspired them. And I'm going, I want to see that person, because I seriously doubt that person ever existed.
Well, here's the thing, right? The focus groups that he's doing are his audience. So you have to be a fan of Dr. Phil. You have to know that Donald Trump is coming to speak with Dr. Phil, and you have to live in Texas where this is filmed. So your demographic right
now
there.
That you've laid that out, maybe. But even then, I doubt that, because I don't think there are any new voters. I think it's just going to be a matter of who turns out. If Democrats don't eat each other and they get their voters out, I think Biden's going to win. But I don't see any of those mystery voters coming out of nowhere. People who are like, oh, I didn't like him, I didn't vote for him, but he's inspired me. I'm not buying any of that nonsense.
I agree. I think that that's ridiculous. And what is interesting is I've had this conversation with some friends over the last couple of weeks where it seems like the polls that we're seeing, the reason that they're favoring Donald Trump is so many of them are still trying to factor in that algorithm of 2016 where Donald Trump supporters were not identifying themselves.
Right.
Pollsters would call and they would be too afraid to say that they supported Donald Trump. Do you know anybody now who is too afraid to say that they support Donald Trump? No. They're out and proud, right? Like they're doing their own white supremacist marches.
Yeah, but not as proud as they were. I mean, to be honest, I've actually seen some of the Trump flags coming down in the neighborhood. So the conviction, I think, is going to have some, but I think they'll come back around. But that outward, I'm staking my flag. I've seen some of that going the other way. And I got to think that comes with them voting for RFK Jr. or staying home.
Which I'm totally fine with. And a lot of times, I mean, I think a lot of those cases, the flag is coming down because their wife is just putting up the American flag upside down.
That would be great too. Lastly, I got to get your thoughts on Trump's video of the other day. He came out and, convicted felon Trump, put out this video claiming that Putin was going to release this Wall Street Journal reporter, this Evan Gershkovich, because I don't know why he thought this was the point, but Trump believes that Vladimir Putin will do that for me, he said. I don't believe he'll do it for anyone else. So he believes, for some reason, that Vlad is going to release this reporter. And it got me thinking about the Reagan era. When Reagan put his hand on the Bible and you saw the hostages being released, is he trying to, put on some kind of low-level retro political theater? Any thoughts?
I wonder. I think we know that there was almost a deal where Evan was going to come home and they were going to release Navalny. And it was down to the last second of this deal almost happening. And then somebody at the prison killed Navalny. And there's no doubt in my mind that Putin wanted him dead this whole time. But I don't think Putin knew that it was going to happen. And I think now that Donald Trump is intervening in this, what is scary and sad is it's like he's stuck in this horrible place that's this terrifying place where and his family is back here just worried and scared that he's never going to come home. And you're playing with that. You're playing with these emotions and you're damaging whatever behind the scenes conversations are happening about this.
Yeah.
And that is what infuriates me. I would also say, just because I am very pro Evan, bring Evan home. I don't even know him that well, but I've written, I keep writing to him. I keep sending him like weird poetry and updates on the news and stuff like that. You can write to him. You can go to the Free Evan website and they will translate all of your like messages to him into Russian so that the Russian prison people will give them to him. And I know that that is one thing that Brittany Griner said really helped her a lot when she was there, and that it mattered so much being able to hear from people at a time when she was thinking about suicide. So I would plea with folks to look it up and send the guy a message.
There you go. I just find it, I don't know, distasteful that you would do this in public, that this would be this kind of a, I don't know, a stunt. It just seems, well, it seems Trumpian, and I shouldn't be surprised. But as always, Sarah, I appreciate the time. Great stuff. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Happy Pride Month.
Back at you, our good friend Sarah Burris. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Quick break. Right back.
You're listening to Mad Radio, WMDX, Madison's home for Matinair on Air.
This is your hometown radio, refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Clouds return to the area tonight, some rain developing late, and lows in the mid-50s. For tomorrow, more clouds around, a couple of showers early, then maybe some sunny peaks in the afternoon. Highs to the low 70s. Nice Sunday, mostly sunny, high mid-70s. Currently, it's 59 degrees.
Tons of glass artists share the same passion for eye-catching art as Ignite Glass and Gifts, so we're showcasing their work alongside our talented local artists and our in-house Ignite artists. The latest techniques, the hottest colors, and mind-blowing designs are here for you to enjoy. Madison's favorite for glass, gifts, and vape, Ignite Glass and Gifts, Monona Drive, Williamson Street, and Odana Road, plus IgniteGlassandGifts.com. Do your eyes a favor and see this stuff.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So as you know, we've been talking about the situation at American Airlines for a while now. It's probably been over a year that we've been talking about the fact that the flight attendants haven't seen a raise. As I understand it, the last contract was negotiated a decade ago, very much pre-pandemic wage levels. And you go, that I don't know how that's good for keeping people, but I saw this thing that said a new hire flight attendant at American Airlines, their starting wage is just $27,000 a year, which makes the CEO's compensation more than 1,100 times what the starting wage of the person who's actually doing the work and creating the wealth that he's putting in his pocket. It's incredible to me. But some news, American Airlines flight attendants, they have opened a strike command center. And here to share some thoughts on, you know, is this where we're going to head? I've asked Julie Hedrick to come talk with us. Julie is the national president of the Association of Professional Flight Attendants, APFA Unity, APFA.org, the website. Julie, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks for having me on again, Rick. So happy to be here today.
So we've opened this strike center. This sounds serious.
It is serious. We have been in negotiations since August of 2021. We just completed 5 weeks of negotiations in a row. Two of those last 2 weeks were in Washington, D.C. at the National Mediation Board. So we are trying to get an agreement so that our flight attendants can get paid, our new hire flight attendants can actually afford rent. But I'm telling you, you know, we are, I don't know about American Airlines though. I mean, APFA wants a contract, but American doesn't seem to really want a contract for the flight attendants. They seem to want to delay this as long as they can possibly delay it. And we opened up our strike center this week because we are preparing to get ready to strike. We want to make sure our flight attendants have everything they possibly can, all the information they need, so that they feel comfortable when that day comes. And we've also been sending out our strike book, which gives them all the information they need for when we do call for a strike.
And so our
flight attendants have responded very well. There's been a lot of calls in, to say the least. Well,
I can imagine. But nobody wants a strike. Everyone wants a contract. And as I say all the time, this is the last arrow in the quiver. This has been a long road. It's, you know, as I said at the beginning, am I accurate in saying the wages that they're working under right now were negotiated probably a decade ago or close to?
Yes. So our last contract was not a Section 6 contract, which is what we are under right now, but for the Railway Labor Act. It was a merger contract. And that was back in 2014. We merged with US Air. And so our flight attendants today are living under those wages that were negotiated back then. That contract was a 5-year contract. So our last raise was in January of 2019, pre-pandemic. And to say the least, we worked really hard during the pandemic. We risked our lives to make sure that our passengers and the medical supplies got to where they needed to be. And this is how American Airlines has decided to treat their flight attendants.
No, you were the frontline heroes. You were the folks who showed up. Absolutely. You were the essential folks that got us through part of that. And I guess, you know, most union people like me are going, well, why is it taking so long to go on strike? Why is this, why hasn't this already happened? Since it appears American isn't really interested in bargaining in good faith. And as I said, last arrow in the quiver, at some point, that why haven't we gotten there yet?
So it's this thing called the Railway Labor Act. And the Railway Labor Act for airlines and railroads makes it a lot more difficult for us to actually get to the point of going on strike. And we have been fighting for us to be able to exercise that right to strike. But as you know, in the last 20 years, only two small airlines have been released by the National Mediation Board. And for American, you know, for us, the flight attendants at American, for the past 40 years, every contract that we have gotten in Section 6 bargaining has been with a release. So we have told the National Mediation Board that this is, it seems to be the only way American really comes to the table and feels the pressure to get the job done.
No, because, you know, look, as someone who I've spent all my life in the labor movement, a lot of us don't understand what the Railway Labor Act does and the restraints that it puts on you to get this. And, you know, the advantages that that the employer has in dragging this part of this process out. So for me to get that release, which means that you can put that arrow back in the quiver and use it if necessary, that's kind of like to jumpstart the discussions. Or am I missing something?
So we have been, we've had the mediators with us from the National Mediation Board. They have been working with us for a year now. They started working with us in June of 23. And that's part of the process, is you have to basically, you know, ask the National Mediation Board for mediated sessions. So we've been meeting with them. They have been trying to help us get a deal, and they haven't been successful. Yeah. Now, it's not on them. They are not there to make the deal happen. They are there to help both of us try and get the deal done. Now, this last week, we were in Washington, D.C., and those talks got elevated. So we were there with the actual National Mediation Board, and we did meet with the three members of the National Mediation Board that are appointed by the president, and they were trying to help us get the deal done. Still no luck. We are still not there. We will. This is a last-ditch attempt. This next week, we are going to D.C. and we are meeting again per the company's request, not per the union's request, but the company's request. They said they needed one more week to try and get this done. So this next week, we will be in D.C. meeting again with the National Mediation Board. And we're hoping that we can get an agreement. But I'm not going to say that it looks promising. I don't know if you're aware of what happened this last week. But the CEO of our airline went out and did a video and basically directly bargained with our flight attendants and said, we'll give you a 17% raise as of June 1st. No strings attached. It didn't work. Our flight attendants resoundingly told us Absolutely not. And told him, absolutely not. They want a contract. We want an industry leading contract. And this is not that. This right. is a little bump up in the wages that he thinks that we're going to take and then keep bargaining, which we know this is just a delay tactic and basically a PR tactic also.
Outside of it being, you know, an unfair labor practice, which I think this is, right?
Yes.
Outside of being that, it's also nowhere near what your flight attendants have given up no. after, you know, a decade of wages and inflation being taken that away. So it seems to me that, you know, the number that he threw out there wasn't anywhere near sufficient. And I think it would embolden people to go, wait a second, I think you live in a different world, making almost 1,200 times what a new flight attendant would make. So let me ask you this. You said industry-leading contract. In the rest of the industry, where are the American flight attendants?
Okay, well, we are behind for sure. What the big debate is here right now is Southwest flight attendants, they approved their contract in April. And they basically brought up the industry standard for flight attendants to a much higher level than Delta. American is firm in believing that Delta flight attendants are the highest paid in the industry. And as you know, they are non-unionized workforce. Those are wages that were just given to them. They are not wages in a contract. And we've been saying, no, the new industry standard is actually Southwest. And listen, the company knows this. We pushed back our negotiations in December because we were waiting to see if Southwest flight attendants actually would pass their contract at that time. The company and the union did that. It wasn't just the union. And we were waiting to see if there was going to be a new industry standard. Well, that one didn't pass. And so here in April, when this passed, and all of a sudden the company came back and said, oh, no, they're not the highest paid. It's still Delta. It was a whole new tactic they took, basically to try and keep our wages down as much as they possibly can.
But outside of the industry standard jargon and all that, and who's the highest and who's that, this is a profitable company. The people who are doing these jobs, your flight attendants, are the frontline people who are creating this wealth for this company. It should trickle down to the people who are actually doing the work. It just seems a matter of basic fairness. If you're bringing in a bunch of revenue where a CEO can make almost 1,200 times a new hire flight attendant, it seems to me the distribution of that revenue coming in is a little bit skewed.
To say the least. We have seen this for many, many years in the airline industry. Listen, I've been a flight attendant 42 years, and I can tell you I've seen this with many previous CEOs. All of a sudden, they need this big raise, and the rest of us have to suffer and fight for our wages and fight for retroactive pay and fight for per diem. Every flight attendant I talk to, I say this. Listen, these are Section 6 negotiations, and as long as I've been here, we've had to fight for what we deserve. And this is what it's going to look like for the rest of your career. So at least now you really know how to fight for it. And we're not going to give up. We are going to continue this fight until we get the contract that we deserve.
Now, we've been talking about this for, you know, several months now, getting to this point. You're still asking for this release, which would then, you know, obviously put the arrow back in your quiver, the ability to strike at some point in the future. It isn't an immediate. You're not going to immediately strike. At least I don't think so.
Right.
When are we expecting this? Do we expect this if talks break down next week? Do we have kind of a timeline or is that still up in the air?
I'll kind of walk through it. I've been walking through this with a lot of people lately because you don't see many, you know, you haven't seen flight attendants or airline industry getting released. As I said, there's only been two in the last 20 years. So I'll kind of just walk through the process. The first process is, you know, once the talks break down and we are at an impasse, then the NMB would proffer arbitration. If either party rejects that, then we move on to the next step, which is a release into a 30-day cooling off period. Now, during that 30-day cooling off period, the president it's either during or after, he can request a PEB, which is a presidential emergency board. And they have 30 days with that presidential emergency board to make recommendations. They would make those recommendations to the airline and to the union. And if either party rejects again, then we would go into another 30-day cooling off period. So there is one more thing in this process that could happen. It doesn't normally happen with the airlines. It normally does happen with the railroads in the past, but it is Congress can impose a contract on us. We, of course, do not want that. We are hoping Congress will not do that. Congress has actually done a great job. They've signed, helped us with letters to the NMB, and they've signed their names to it, 178. Actually, I think we talked about this the last time I was on, have signed on to a letter that was sent to the NMB basically saying, let us exercise our right to strike. So there's quite a process still, even if we do get released. But, you know, we're gonna keep pushing it. We cannot sit here at this impasse for much longer. We have, as you said, the new hire flight attendants are making $27,000 a year before taxes are taken out. They have to live in expensive cities, which means they're living in their cars.
Yeah.
And that it's just totally unacceptable. This is really corporate greed at American Airlines.
No, and this is, you know, the problem with this is if this company were, you are crying poverty, if their CEO is, you know, giving money back, if they weren't doing all the things that, that corporate America has been doing, gouging consumers and doing the things they do, you go, yeah, well, they're poor. They don't have the money. They've got it. They just don't want to share it. They just don't want to pay the people who are actually doing the work.
I agree with you 100%. I will tell you, last year, they took bonuses up to 60% of their salary, basically rewarding themselves for getting through the pandemic. While they worked at home remote, right, while the rest of us were out on the planes putting our lives at risk, they rewarded themselves. Wow. With incentives of up to 60% of their salary.
Absolutely remarkable. But Julie, I wish you guys the best. I know you've opened this command center. I guess this is to inform members of the next couple of steps to mobilize, right?
Yes, we've opened the command center yesterday or on Wednesday. Yes, yesterday. It's been a long week. And our flight attendants are calling in. They have a lot of questions about health benefits, what happens if, you know, I'm out on a medical leave and what happens to my health benefits. There's a lot of questions. Yeah. What happens if I'm on a layover and we go on strike? So the command center is helping them right now. Our website, we've also updated with all the information that we have on going on strike. And then we also are sending out booklets to every flight attendant in the mail so they can keep that in their bag. So if it happens to them when they're on a trip, they have all the information they need.
And again, nobody wants a strike. You just want a good contract.
No, we absolutely do not want to strike. And really, more than anything, for our passengers and for our flight attendants, we want an agreement. We want to get our passengers to their destinations. That's our job. And we enjoy our job. But we will do what it takes to get the contract that we deserve.
No, you got to eat. At the end of the day, you know, one of the things, when we started having these conversations, the fact that flight attendants don't get paid while the passengers are sitting and until the doors close or whatever that was, the boarding process, I'm going, so you're doing a whole bunch of work and not getting paid for it? You need to renegotiate that part of your contracts.
We are. That's part of it.
It's amazing to me. But Julie, I appreciate the time. Keep up the fight, and I look forward to hearing from you again. Hopefully the next time we talk, there will be that industry-setting contract on the table.
Thank you so much, and thank you so much for getting our message out there. We really appreciate it.
Love the work you guys do. Julie Hedrick, National President of the Association of Professional Flight Attendants, APFA.org, the website. If you want to check that out, I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Going to take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1929. That was the day that Police Chief Orville Ederholt was shot and killed at a camp of striking textile workers in Gastonia, North Carolina. The textile mills had fallen on hard times in the late 1920s. During World War I, demand for cloth for uniforms had sent the industry booming. But at the end of the war, orders dried up. Then, to make matters worse, new fashion trends had women wearing shorter skirts, further cutting demand. In response, the mill owners at the Lorry Mill began what was called the stretch out. They laid off numerous workers and demanded that those who remained worked faster without raising wages or, in many cases, cutting workers' pay. The National Textile Workers Union recognized that these conditions made it an ideal time to begin organizing in the South. The Lorry Mill was the largest in the state. On April 1st, 1,800 workers went out on strike. The company responded by evicting strikers from company housing and hiring deputies to harass picketers. As tensions escalated, Police Chief Adderholt, along with some of his officers and company-hired guns, went to a workers' camp. When Adderholt was shot and killed by an unknown person, the police arrested dozens of strikers. 16 eventually stood trial, but no one was convicted. Then, in September, Ella Mae Wiggins, a popular speaker who wrote songs for the strikers, was shot and killed at a workers' rally. The union lost its fight, and North Carolina remains one of the lowest unionized workforces in the nation.
They labored in the textile factories from early morning till close.
Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
You know, we were talking about the American Airlines flight attendants and then the fact that they haven't seen an increase in the wages that they earn since before the pandemic. Now, remember, we went through the pandemic of them being frontline heroes and essential, and we remember the history, at least I hope we do. And we've lived through a massive bout of inflation, some predictable, some, well, not so much, most of it greedy corporations seeing an opportunity to line their pockets. And the fact that you've got a CEO who, and this stat just blows my mind, that makes nearly 1,200 times a new hire flight attendant, which means you could get rid of that one guy and hire 1,200 new flight attendants. I'm struggling with that and how that works. And it got me thinking, and this is where, you know, being fortunate enough to have started in the labor movement young and met a lot of old timers and being willing to listen has done me well. I remember an old guy who, you know, was telling stories about, you know, the fights of the 40s and the 50s and how every other contract they would go on strike, even if it was for just one day. This idea of building solidarity, building commonality, and more importantly, understanding that there's no such thing as a benevolent corporation. The company doesn't bequeath you with family-sustaining wages and good health care or good pensions. That just doesn't happen. There's a competitive part of this, yes, but there's also the power part of it. And that's the part of workers standing up and demanding better, demanding more of the share of the wealth that their labor creates. And this guy was very clear about it. He said, look, you know, we didn't want to hurt the company, but we wanted our part of what we created. We wanted the share of the wealth that we created to go into our pockets and help our families. And oh, by the way, help that company as well, because clearly we could afford the products. Clearly, as consumers, we could then go and create the demand that corporate America needed. We've seemed to have forgotten that worker-first mentality of making sure that we earn enough to be able to support ourselves, roof over the head, food on the table, shoes on the feet, clothes on the back, that stuff. But also some of the niceties. You know, the bread and roses strike. Bread, yes, but roses too. Yeah, we want sustenance. We want basic necessities. We want the bottom layer of Maslow's hierarchy. But we also want things that are going to move us up towards that self-actualization. We want better lives. We want better opportunities. We want more of what's going to make life worth living instead of just toiling away. And it got me thinking about you know, again, we've been talking about child labor here on the program for a while, and it's one of those things that I'm kind of stuck on. And I remembered a poem from Sarah Norcliffe Cleghorn, written sometime around the turn of the 20th century. It was titled Golf Links. Four very short lines, but in four short lines captured what, you know, is cruelty and injustice and inequality and desperation. The poem reads, "The golf links lie so near the mill that almost every day the laboring children can look out and see the men play." And you go, you know, every time I see Donald Trump on the golf course, that's where my mind goes. The entitlement that comes with that, the celebration by the working class that you have this person on the golf course and caring about what he does there while we have children laboring, while there are people who are making the arguments that we need cheaper labor. We're literally making an argument, and it's got me thinking about the arguments of the past. You know, late 19th, early 20th centuries, you had, you know, people like, you know, all these trade associations. You know, the Textile Association, the Mining, the Manufacturers Association, all these people who were pitching for, hey, we need cheap labor. Wealthy industrialists, the CEOs of the time, the Carnegies, the Rockefellers. You had your anti-regulation zealots. We got them now. You've got child labor lobbyists. People go, no, we need cheap labor. Feed us the drug of cheap labor, government. And the argument was not much different than what we're hearing today. Well, you know, it's a necessity. Families need children. We need a third, fourth income to survive because wages haven't gone up enough. Or the other one, it's market principles. Businesses should be allowed to operate without interference from you, the government. Any restriction on child labor would be an interference with the natural free market, the invisible hand. Then you hear the parental rights argument. Oh, well, you know, parents, not government, parents should have the choice to decide whether their children are in the workplace. Now, understand, desperation, do you think parents want to have to choose to send their kids into the workplace? No. Employers want it because they want Junior competing with Dad for the wages that he pays. And then one of my favorite arguments from that period was, you're cheating your children out of an educational experience, restricting their ability to go into the mines or the mills or the factories. They could learn valuable work experience. They could learn while they work for cheap wages. And it's kind of the same stuff we hear today. So for me, when I talk to people like Julie Hedrick, who's saying, look, you know, we're going to fight for what we earn. We're going to fight for the wages that our labor creates, and we're going to get a part of that because we earn it. I say this is where we should be as a nation. Understand where we've come from. We've come from the place where the wealth class has pitted the working class against each other. The Jay Gould, I could pay half the working class to murder the other half. They're kind of doing that now and not even paying for it because we're doing it to each other. So for me, you know, in these moments when you start talking about, hey, how do we create an economy that truly works, that truly puts enough food on the table, decent clothes on the back, future generations' opportunities, retirement security, health security. How do we do that? And I come back to exactly what Julie Hedrick and the flight attendants are doing there at American. They're saying we demand to sit down, negotiate, bargain in good faith for a contract that is going to fulfill our needs, our wants, our demands. Corporate America, they're out there, they're getting theirs. And trust me, they have made an enormous amount of money off of the slow-moving Railway Labor Act. And that's on purpose. That's by choice. So for me, we're in this moment right now. And I wish Julian and the flight attendants the best. And I'm hoping for a release coming soon. But for all of us, this is societal. We should all be standing together, rooting for our neighbors on both sides of us. So when they do better, we all do better. You know, that rising tide thing. The problem is the big boats have gotten so big, it's crushing the rest of us. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, Rick at therickSmithShow.com. Miss any portion of the program, grab the podcast. And as always, thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. At Rick at therickSmithShow.com.
You're listening to Mad Radio.
WMDX 1580 AM Columbus. W224 EG Madison.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.